They will never know how close they came to me getting up there and singing bass with them. That almost became a trio. Beautifully done, thank you. Very enjoyable. Before Mark, I guess Mark's already doing this. I want to let you know that you're guinea pigs again today. I already announced this sermon on our video program, which is to show this weekend, so bear with me if you would. Our President George W. Bush continues to say at the end of almost every speech he makes, "God bless America." But then he says, "May God continue to bless America." I've heard him say that many times. Because by that statement, he acknowledges that God has been blessing America. And as I look, almost in astonishment at how short, swift, and incredible that victory was in Iraq, actually matching and superseding in some ways what happened during World War II when General George E. Patton was very rapidly advancing across southern France with the Third Army. There's been nothing like it, literally, in military history so long as mankind has been on the earth. What we saw happening in the Iraq War, it was as billed. The whimpering leftist liberal media, after about 3 days, wondered why there was no shock and awe. But believe me, there was a lot of shock and awe. It was a little bit longer in coming. They expected the war to be over, I guess, in about 14 hours. But it was over within a matter of 3 weeks or so, and even though there are still people here and there who want to be suicide bombers, all organized resistance is gone. A regime is gone. An entire army has been destroyed. Hundreds or thousands of tanks and vehicles have been destroyed. The last 50 of his aircraft were found under camouflage netting out in western Iraq by some Australians, and they, of course, will be used, if they are usable, by coalition forces, or perhaps the Australians will take them down there. But an entire army is gone. And even though there were little cases here and there of, quote, collateral damage, end quote, it was so little as to be virtually unnoticeable. And the point is that for the first time in all of history, a war was waged in order to remove an army and a regime, but to keep the country intact and to try to prevent at all costs, and sometimes at cost of American and coalition lives, the destruction of civilian infrastructure and, of course, the killing of innocent civilians. There's been nothing like it in all of history. So God has given America a great victory, I believe. Now, to the victor does not belong the spoils. To Europe, especially to France, Germany, and Russia, belongs the spoils. To Kofi Annan and the UN belong the spoils. And so they are making all kinds of noises about coming in and taking over and getting the Americans out there as soon as they possibly can. The Iraqis are a strange people. They remind me of little children in the sense that that great riotous demonstration the other day was, on the one hand, praising American troops for getting rid of Saddam. They said, "No Saddam, no America." Now, how idiotic is that? Without America, there would still have been Saddam. So it took America and the coalition to get rid of Saddam, but now, almost immediately after the war, the Iraqis are out there demonstrating, saying, as one imam in the mosque, as they were in there praying, said just the other day, "You had better leave with all of your forces unless we are forced to drive you out." They don't have any more guns. They don't have any more tanks. They don't have any more armored vehicles. They don't have any aircraft. But those people out in the street are going to drive our U.S. Marines and our Army out of there. And they said they would. So they were in there praying that that would happen. Well, you know, God has blessed America as he did in World War II, in Grenada, in Panama, and in the first Gulf War. One of the swiftest, most remarkable victories that I have ever heard of in my life. Will God continue to bless America? And in what other ways is God blessing America, if he is at all? You know, as the media gets a hold of this, they just are never satisfied, are they? The leftist liberal media. The anti-war demonstrators are brokenhearted. It didn't come out the way they wanted it to. The liberal media is whining about looting, saying that it was our responsibility to protect their national museum. It was our responsibility to prevent all kinds of looting, and it went on anyway. And it seems like the more breathtaking and remarkable the success on the battlefield, the more desperate a lot of the media is to find something, anything, with which they can take issue. And so they go far afield to do about. The polls have been shown overwhelming support for the war and the president by the people at large. And the more the media cover the anti-war demonstrations and provide a forum for those who organize them, the happier the leftist liberal media becomes. You know, it's unbelievable when you look at some of the statements that have been coming out of the media and from Hollywood in these last few weeks. It's as if they live in a completely different world, a different planet than we do. And not a one of those people who made the dire predictions they're going to go to Australia, they're going to move to Switzerland, they're never coming back to the United States, moved out. Not a one of those who said, if it comes out the way I'm predicting, I'll personally crawl on broken glass and apologize to George Bush. No glass, no apology. Haven't been heard from again. Like spoiled little children, it didn't come out the way they wanted it to. They were supporters of Saddam Hussein. People whine, people ask, well, yes, I know God gave us a victory, except they don't put it that way. Our troops victorious. But why did my boy have to die? People say, where was God when my baby died? Where was God when my son was killed? Where was God when it hurts? We congratulate ourselves for our successes, and then we blame God for anything that comes along that we don't like, that made issue with. Now, why do the Muslim people of the world, why do the third world countries hate us so much? You've been told time and again it's two things, freedom and affluence. And that's simply not true. Most of those people don't even have a concept of what freedom is all about. Affluence? Well, how do they see that affluence? They only see it on American television, American motion pictures. They only see it in magazines or on the internet, but they don't see it up close. No, it's far deeper than that. I'm going to tell you something that may shock you, but there are many reasons why Iraqis hate us that actually are exactly why God himself says he is angry at us. The Iraqis hate us because of valid reasons, the way they look at it. They hate us because of our pornography. The Supreme Court, a bunch of old men dressed in dresses, viewed it for hours and hours and hours and saw all this nudity and all this absolute obscenity and decided it wasn't dirty. And that happened many, many years ago. I was looking through the Supreme Court decisions today, looking at an awful lot of the cases, looking at child pornography and pornography being, quote, a manner of free speech and how long ago some of those things came down. So America leads the world in the filming, production, and distribution of pornography of the most grotesque, obscene, satanic kind, child pornography. There's a website, by the way, fighting that. They say there are 13,000 sites on the internet that show child pornography. And this one website and a group of others have banded together and they've really managed to get the government to crack down and remove about 9,000 of them. Well, that leaves 10, 11, 12, 13, several more for them to go. There's another reason why they hate us. They hate our lifestyle, the way it is portrayed to them. It's not only affluence, it's our lifestyle. Now, by that I mean they hate our divorce statistics. They hate desertion and abandonment. They hate the status of women in the United States. They hate the, as Rush Limbaugh says, feminazis. They hate the women's lib movement. And even though Arab nations are among some of the most rampant with regard to homosexuality, they are hypocritical. In a lot of cases, the things that I'm telling you are the pot calling the kettle black. And I understand that because their lifestyle, in a lot of ways, is very, very bad. And in certain particulars, it is very, very good. Come to that a little later on. And I'll just state right now that when I was first in Cairo, Egypt, I began to realize it was safer on the streets in the worst slums in Cairo, Egypt, with my watch and my ring on my wrist and finger than it is even in certain neighborhoods in Tyler, Texas. Because some of those states are virtually crime-free. As I've said over the years, I've seen Arabs with only one hand. But I've never seen an Arab with no hands. So when you have your hand lopped off because you steal, because you go into a jewelry store or even a bakery and steal a loaf of bread, that seems to be awfully brutal to our Western way of thinking. But it sure does discourage crime. They hate our feminist movements, they hate our Western females, they hate our dress and our undress. They don't like to see women going along displaying so much of their bodies that there leaves nothing to the imagination. They hate our alcoholism because every time that our troops or some of our diplomats go over there, they have to hide the liquor. And even though some of the people in Saudi Arabia themselves have liquor in their dwellings and they will do it on a QT, they're sort of like Baptists. When mother-in-law comes to visit, they hide the liquor somewhere. And they do it only clandestinely. They don't do it out in the open. They especially hate our fascination with crime and with murder. Now, in the book of Isaiah, Isaiah is making comparisons between God's people and other nations. And he compares the pagan religions and pagan nations with God's people. He says in Isaiah 1, verses 2 through 6, "Hear, O heavens, and give ear, O earth, for the Eternal has spoken. I have nourished and brought up children, and they have rebelled against me. The ox knows his owner, and the ass his master's crib, but Israel does not know, and my people do not consider. Ah, sinful nation, a people laden with iniquity, a seed of evildoers, children that are corruptors, they have forsaken the Eternal. They have provoked the Holy One of Israel unto anger. They are gone away backward." Isaiah 3:12 says, "As for my people, children are their oppressors, and women rule over them." And wait until Hillary gets into the White House if you doubt that. By the way, has anybody heard from her lately? Good. Well, she's been very, very quiet. You know, she thinks it takes a village. The other day, we were sitting in a restaurant. There was a little child there who would throw something. The mother would pick it up. He'd throw it again. She'd pick it up. He'd turn around, making noises and bothering the people next to him. She grabbed him and hugged him. He was just making an absolute scene, total chaos. She never even so much as shook her finger and said no. She just tried to hug him and kiss him, and he was just absolutely out of control. I don't know why people think that dogs are smarter than children. I don't know why they think parrots and parakeets are smarter than children. I don't know why they think a chimpanzee is brighter and smarter than their little precious children, but they do. They think that you can teach a dog by simple commands, heel, here comes the dog. Sit, the dog sits. Roll over, dog rolls over. Go get my slippers, dog will go get the slippers. You got to teach him by training, of course, and reward. And you take a newspaper so you don't hurt the dog, it just scares him, and you whack him on his little rear end a few times. No, no, nasty dog, dirty dog, rub his nose in it, put him immediately outside and show him where to go. And eventually you can housebreak a dog in about 2 days. Some people haven't housebroken their children up to age 12. There are kids who go off to the first, second, and third grade that are still sitting there. When they get a little higher in their chair, a teacher comes along with a ruler to fix the problem. And I know because I used to deal with, you know, all the different age groups in schools and was over three different grade and high schools for a lot of my life. So I know the way those things go. And he says here that we are like children. We are a seed of evildoers, children that are corruptors. We are like rebellious children in God's sight, who have not been disciplined, are not in control, and have not been taught the difference between right and wrong. Why should you be stricken anymore? Verse 5, like corporal punishment. But in this case, the kid is so rebellious, it only seems to harden his heart and make him worse. He doesn't repent. You will revolt more and more. The whole head is sick, and the whole heart faint, doing the analogy of a nation to a body. From the sole of the foot, even under the head, there is no soundness in it, but wounds and bruises and putrefying sores. They have not been clothed, neither bound up, neither mollified with ointment. Well, God says, make an hedge through Ezekiel, and talks about hedging up the wild vine that grows over the rocky kind of a fence that is around it. And he shows that the ministers and the leaders of the country are supposed to be there to point out the difference between right and wrong, the difference between sin and righteousness, the morality that Almighty God expects of us. And instead, where are they and what do they do? What is the Supreme Court mostly about? Almost every decision you can think of that is handed down by the Supreme Court is blatantly wrong and contrary to the laws of God. The very ones who should be out in the forefront teaching people about the laws of God, the laws of marriage, the laws of child rearing, laws having to do with business and commerce and industry, are instead out there saying the law has been done away. They are in the forefront of saying no law, and their favorite statement is, that's legalism. They don't want anything to be legal, they want it to be illegal. If you ever take exception to their statement, just follow it along to a logical question, it doesn't make a bit of sense. Well, crime does pay. You know, I heard when I was a boy that crime doesn't pay. But as I've watched in the decades that have gone on since the time that J. Edgar Hoover was not under the gun by the leftist liberal who took exception with his lifestyle, and I don't know if that is true or not, don't really care to investigate it, but back during the days when J. Edgar Hoover was still in control of the FBI and during World War II days, he said any child that is brought up to revere the Ten Commandments will have little trouble with the law. And he was absolutely right. Well, crime in the United States has drastically changed our social habits, hasn't it? It's changed the way we build our automobiles. It's changed the way we carry keys in our purses and pockets. It's changed the little peepholes. It's changed the way the canning and packaging industry and all the supermarkets. Some of them have big mirrors in the hallways. Others have little cameras all around. And of course, when those idiots up in Seattle many decades ago killed a lot of people just out of some spooky desire to know that I killed somebody by putting strychnine in their orange juice, it cost the packaging industry billions of dollars. So when I open my orange juice or my milk now, I've got to unscrew the lid. Then there's a little plastic thing I get a hold of. I've got to pull that out. Most of them are sealed at least twice. So you can't just casually go into a supermarket, open something, pour in some poison, and walk out and know that you're going to kill someone in agony, which these rotten, filthy murderers did. Women know enough that when they are alone and driving at night, there are certain automobiles, well, we'll go into that, but you know, the detail. You know, some cars, when you get in, the minute you close the door and put the key in the lock, all four doors lock. It's a safety feature. Women carry mace, so they carry some kind of a little warning device. There's a panic button on most of the little keys that have a little battery in them. I like to remember the one about the lady in the shopping mall, the outdoor mall, and she was there unsuccessfully trying to open the door, and she was just doing that and that and that, and the thing wouldn't open, and finally a gentleman came by, and she said, I just can't get my door open. You suppose that hardware store over there would have a battery for this? He said, Madam, may I help? He took the key and put it in the lock, opened it up, let her get in the car, and she thanked him, and that was that. Well, no, she was not a blonde. That is not a blonde joke. That actually happened. Well, the trustees of our laws is supposed to be the American judicial system. They're the keeper of the laws. And the American judicial system is absolutely in chaos. I don't know how many of you have ever watched the program called Law and Order. But on an occasion, I never watched it when it first came around, but I have watched the reruns a few times, and some of the outcome of some of those trials are so outrageous, where murderers go free, that it just is, you just can't handle it. A recent study from the U.S. Justice Department reveals that the cost of crime in the United States now is $450 billion a year. That's what it costs us as a nation. When it comes to crime, the judicial system is in chaos, and it has failed you and me and the masses. The expert psychologists and social engineers have pervaded the courts, as they are pervading the military and pervading practically other aspects, because they look at multiculturalism, at racial, not just blending everybody into one great big mass like they tried to do in ancient Babylon, but they play that card every single time with regard to college entry, with regard to the business world, wherever it is, and especially in court. And you see cases like that continually. It's gotten to where the poor criminal is the victim. Now, I just looked it up this morning, and there are in the Tyler phone book, yes, 54 pages advertising lawyers in the Tyler phone book. And Tyler is only, what, about 100,000 people. 54 pages filled with lawyers' names and addresses and phone numbers. And a lot of them, they call them ambulance chasers because a lot of them are there talking about how, you know, people ought to jump on the bus and grab their neck. But it says, if you've been injured on the job, boy, we're going to get you a big settlement. Well, I don't need to go on and on about what that's done to the economy, what it does to insurance, how it's driven so many businessmen, so many doctors out of business because they can't afford the insurance. Because of malpractice suits and some of these incredible settlements. How do you like someone being given about $2 to $3 billion because Philip Morris caused them to have lung cancer? How do you like Smith & Wesson being sued because some criminal broke into a sporting goods store, stole a gun, went out and murdered with it, and then they sue the gun manufacturer? And the courts uphold that kind of thing from time to time in this country. What about the woman that had boiling hot coffee? Was it a woman spilled in her lap and got this gigantic multi-million dollar settlement because her little old legs got burnt? For pity's sake. That's the courts. It's virtually paralyzed. It doesn't seem to be able to act logically. When someone commits a crime, it had to be deprivation. It had to be that he was maybe temporarily insane. What is temporary insanity? Well, what is temporary insanity? What do you mean? He's sane now, but he was insane then. Before that, he was sane. But during that moment, he was temporarily insane, so therefore, he is not guilty by reason of temporary insanity. That's one of the most ludicrous statements you could ever make up. But it's part of our system. You know, the nation of Iraq had a rash of prostitution some time ago. And then under Saddam Hussein, now this is awful, but he invoked a law which says that any pimp caught promoting prostitution would be hanged. That's brutal. And that was a brutal regime. I want you to hear about another brutal regime. I want to go to the basis of all law, God's laws, common sense, and logic. Many people in our society would say this is brutal, and to put that in place in a society would be a brutal regime. So they would judge God. Exodus 21, 12 to 19. This is just some of it. He that smiteth a man so that he die shall surely be put to death. But what if the man called him a dirty name? What if the man approached him with a stick in his hand? What if the man was of a different race? And what if this person a month before that time had been set upon by someone of that race? So suddenly the door opens, and here is a person of that race, and the person who had been set upon earlier has gone through all kinds of trauma, and therefore, seeing this man with a stick in his hand, immediately grabbed a stick and hit him over the head and killed him. So therefore, it was self-defense. Now, do you read any of those things in there? Was the man innocent? I mean, the man who killed the other man. Was he innocent by reason of temporary insanity? It doesn't say that. It just says, if you kill him, doesn't seem to matter where, when, how, or why. Doesn't seem to matter what was going on in your mind. Doesn't seem to matter that your mother made you eat broccoli when you were a kid. Doesn't seem to matter whether or not you've just been deprived and your father, mother are poor. You live in a poverty-stricken neighborhood. It just says, if you kill somebody, you get killed. If a man lie not in wait, but God deliver him into his hand, then I will appoint thee a place whither he shall flee. But if a man come presumptuously upon his neighbor to slay him with guile, you shall take him from mine altar, that he may die. It doesn't matter if he's in there in the temple praying. You grab him, you take him out, and you put him to death. He that smiteth his father or his mother shall surely be put to death. I have actually seen little children hitting their parents in God's church, at the Feast of Tabernacles, out in public, in restaurants. I've seen little children say, no, and hit at their parents. If there are mothers or fathers who allow them to do that, they don't know that they are allowing the potential rearing of a murderer, a criminal, a brute, a thug, who could actually be doing things like that when they're 6'5 and weigh about 240 pounds. And he that stealeth a man, kidnapping, and selleth him, that's slavery, or if he be found in his hand, he shall surely be put to death. You know, it didn't pass in this country until the Lindbergh case, that kidnapping was punishable by death. And in 90-some percent of the cases where kidnapping happens, they do not get the death penalty. Now, only 50% of crime is reported, and only 50% of that which is reported ever really is pursued and followed down to the nth degree to where there's any kind of information about it. And only about 50% of those are ever brought to court. And only about 50% of those, now you've got such a tiny percentage it's minuscule, are ever convicted. And those who are convicted, only a small percentage ever really serve the full sentence. And we have a prison warden sitting right in the front row, and he can tell you about that. He that curses his father or his mother shall surely be put to death. The word is that a little kid was out there and he was stoned the other day. What was he stoned for? Oh, he cursed his mother. He called her an old such and such, so and so. It says that the word would spread so rapidly that others would hear and fear, and that when God says, thus shall you put evil away from among you, the point is that there would be so few people who would pay the ultimate penalty for terrible crimes and infractions that the nation would be virtually crime-free. The elderly would be revered, not put upon, not put away, and not even visited by their relatives, and there are so many sad cases it makes you weep to think about them. He that curses his father or his mother shall surely be put to death. If men strive together, and one smite another with a stone or with his fist, and he die not but keep this bed, if he rise again and walk abroad upon his staff as an injured or a crippled person, then he shall that smote him shall be quit, only he shall pay for the loss of his time and shall cause him to be thoroughly healed. Takes care of him until he's well again. I want to give you a case. This is a documented case. Now, this happened. New Mexico, one of the states, decided that they wanted a program which integrates a criminal back into society, but legally they are, quote, still a prisoner. Now, how do you like that language? They're out in society, but technically they're a prisoner. This was documented. Shane Harrison and Esther Beckley were convicted drug dealers. They were convicted of assault. They were convicted of armed robbery. They entered that partial release program. Partial release, that's like pre-boarding. How do you pre-board? There are people boarding, and we're waiting there, but they're pre-boarding. How can they be pre-boarding when I see them boarding? There are all kinds of words that people use to cover all kinds of crazy things that don't make... What is a partial release program? They're standing half inside and half outside the door. The cop has got only one handcuff on them, and they're going like this trying to get away. He's partially released. But he's not all the way released. He's on partially released. Well, this was the New Mexico partial release program. And so they went out. Weeks into that program, they were arrested and charged with the most brutal murder that Albuquerque ever remembered. When they were awaiting trial, they allegedly robbed and murdered all three employees of a video store. And then along came the grandparents to pick up their grandson, that is the Shane Harrison. And so instead, he took the grandparents out to the suburbs and brutally murdered them both with a shotgun and a pistol. Altogether, 28 bullets were fired into the grandparents' bodies. So much for the New Mexico partial release program. Wasn't that wonderful? There is so much that they try to do with regard to rehabilitation of hardened, rotten, filthy criminals who deal in drugs and sodomy and every filthy thing, including rape of other men that you can imagine, inside of these cesspools. And what do? State after state after state says, we don't have enough money. And they don't. We don't have enough space. And they don't. Because the wave of crime in the United States is so overwhelming that they've got actual quotas. I've talked to J.B. Smith many a time. He's a good friend of mine right here, the sheriff of Smith County in Tyler, Texas. And he also has to have these buses going. You know, you can see this white bus with all the cage work on it, kind of unpainted plane. And every few days I'll see one headed down here toward Huntsville to take them down to a penitentiary, or maybe we'll down to the other penitentiary down near here, south of here by... think Palestine, the town of Palestine. But, you know, also, they've got to turn a certain number of them loose every so many months or every so many years because they don't have room, they don't have the beds, they don't have the money to keep them in jail. And it's the whole principle of putting somebody in jail is wrong. The whole principle is wrong. God didn't say build prisons. He said when they kill somebody, kill them. you get rid of crime that way. Well, as I said, you probably don't like to hear that in Egypt or in some of these repressive Islamic countries, they have laws like that they lifted straight out of the Old Testament, and they actually resort to those laws. Because that sounds to us like brutal thuggery beyond belief, and it's very hard for an American to ever think that that ought to take place in our country. But I'll tell you one thing, public hanging would certainly do an awful lot to curtail murder. If it happened within less than a week, if it happened swiftly and with justice, and they simply hung them right there in public, it would certainly take a great deal of crime right off the streets. You know, most criminals know that they can plea bargain themselves out of any kind of real consequences for their crime. The guy who knows he can get a lawyer and beat the system is not a person who says crime does not pay. He's a person who says crime does pay and pays very, very well. Crime in the United States has risen over 550% since 1963. And back in the early 60s, the crime statistics were frightening even then. The American criminal justice system has taught and is the best teacher, as are the courts of our land, that crime does, in fact, pay. Now, if you look at Exodus 21, 22 to 25, if men strive and hurt a woman with child so that her fruit depart from her and yet no mischief follow, he shall surely be punished according as the woman's husband will lay upon him, and he shall pay as the judges determine. And if any mischief follow, then you shall give life for life, eye for eye, tooth for tooth, hand for hand, foot for foot, burning for burning, wound for wound, stripe for stripe. I once saw a Western motion picture, an old replay, where there was a fanatic guy with weird eyes and hair all over the place. And he was a murderer, and he was quoting that very scripture. It just made you hate him. And the way the whole movie was put together was that this guy was such a weirdo and such a fanatic, for him to quote that just made you hate him. And yet he was quoting the Bible. But you see, that's the way Hollywood does. They will always show a Catholic priest, way back to the days of Bing Crosby, when he would put on the Catholic priest garments and sing his songs and all that. Can you ever remember the Catholic Church and any of the motion pictures in the United States being shown in a very bad light? Nearly always show that the priest is the most compassionate and warm and loving and wonderful person. The Catholic Church is just wonderful. But I can tell you a number of movies, if I could just remember the names of some of them, that will show that Quakers and Mormons and Baptists and Methodists and people who were conservative look like absolute bumpkins and idiots, and especially anybody who is pacifistic, who refuses to fight. They are belittled and ridiculed in the motion pictures, so people understand that that's not the way you want to be. Look at Deuteronomy 8 and verses 10 to 20. When you have eaten and are full, then shall you bless the Eternal your God for the good land which he has given thee. Beware that you forget not the Lord thy God in not keeping his commandments, his judgments, and his statutes, which I command thee this day. His commandments are the Ten Commandments. His judgments are the decisions handed down by judges on the basis of the law, and the statutes are written laws, as you see in Exodus 21, 22, 23, and the book of Leviticus, based upon the Ten Commandments. So a judgment is an oral decision handed down by a judge based upon the commandments and the statutes. The statutes are written laws. We have law books filled with statutes down in the Tyler Smith County Courthouse, no doubt. Lest when you have eaten and are full, and have built goodly houses and dwelt therein, and when your herds and your flocks multiply, and your silver and your gold is multiplied, and all that you have is multiplied, then your heart be lifted up, and you forget the Eternal your God, which brought you forth out of the land of Egypt from the house of bondage. And during the days of unleavened bread, we think of being brought out of the slavery of sin, who led thee through that great and terrible wilderness, wherein were fiery serpents and scorpions and drought, where there was no water, who brought thee forth water out of the rock of flint, who fed thee in the wilderness with manna, which your fathers knew not, that he might humble thee, that he might prove thee or test thee, to do good at your latter end. And you say in your heart, my power and the might of my hand has gotten me this wealth. General Dwight Eisenhower, the late president of the United States, many years ago, warned against that very thing. So did Abraham Lincoln. So did George Washington. Now, let me tell you a stark fact, and you know that this is true. It seems like the Supreme Court, for all the period of time that I have been on this earth, and I remember very well when Landon was running against Roosevelt, that's how far back I go. President Roosevelt began the social programs and began such things as social changes in the United States, and from the time of Roosevelt, the Supreme Court judges have been appointed, not elected. And they were always appointed because the Supreme Court looked at the founding documents of our country as being sort of needing evolutionary change as society itself develops and gradually evolves. So should the founding documents, the Constitution, be interpreted. So they became the interpreters instead of the enforcers of the Constitution. They're continually arguing about the Constitution and what it means and what it's supposed to mean, even about the Second Amendment, for example, about the right to own a firearm. And the arguments are endless. So let me tell you this. Our Declaration of Independence, our Constitution, and our Bill of Rights, as the amendments are called, could not be written and passed through Congress today. It would be utterly impossible, for the language itself would bring about a huge debate in our society because it mentions divine providence. That would be a huge debate. They wouldn't tolerate it. But the founding documents of our country are hanging there by a tiny, thin, frayed thread. And our courts and our system of law are just about to sever the last bit of it. So actually, if you really knew, if you could read some of the books that are available, and I'm going to give you a list of those you can read in a moment, as to just what jeopardy we are in as a country with this idea not only of multiculturalism within the United States, but globalism outside of the United States, the submergence and the abandonment of individual and personal liberty, and also the abandonment of national sovereignty, just to pool it into one great Babylonian confusion out here, to have nations like Nauru and Seychelles telling us what to do in the United States, and our leaders are bending over backwards to give into it. We have won a great victory in Iraq, and we're going to hand it over to Kofi Annan. It galls, at least it galls me. I do not understand the reasoning. Now, there's been a rumor out there. I don't know if it's true or not, and if it is, I hope it isn't. It makes me sick to think about it. That the reason that the British Prime Minister, Tony Blair, is twisting George Bush's arm to get him to go back to the United Nations to have a resolution to get the UN in there as peacekeepers in Iraq is because Tony Blair has aspirations to be the president or the head of the European Union. That he has aspirations outside of just the British United Kingdom. I don't want to believe that's true. I want to believe that he's British through and through, right down to the marrow of his bone. And I've always known that Britain is not going to be a part of the final 10. But you never know about individuals' personal desires and what they would like to see happen in their lives, what they feel their personal destiny is. So what are the reasons? And it also has to do with the fact that, remember, Tony Blair, as long as England is a part of the European Union, has to view things from the European prospect. He's got to work with the French and the Germans and the Belgians and the Russians, and he's got to work with the UN, and he doesn't have the same ability and the same power that the United States does militarily, although he's close, just much smaller, on a smaller scale. And so he has got to bend over backwards to cooperate with Europe. Well, you know what the Bible says about that. It calls it whoredom. It says, my people have gone out and bought lovers, and God condemns that because instead of depending upon God, we depend upon pacts and treaties and alliances and worthless pieces of paper that are not worth the paper that they're written on. Now, you know what is happening in North Korea right now? I was looking at the North Korean website this morning. Oh, yes, they have one. And their propaganda is very, very interesting indeed. When you read, it says that they must worship Kim Jong-il, as he's called, that they are to worship him. I read that in their own transliteration. Listen to their language. This from Pyongyang, Korean News, from the, quote, Democratic People's Republic of Korea. It is not democratic, it isn't of, for, and by the people, and it's not a republic. But that's the name of that brutal regime in North Korea, the Democratic People's Republic of Korea. Pyongyang, April 18th. A spokesman for the Foreign Ministry of the Democratic People's Republic of Korea gave the following answer to a question put to him in a television interview as regards the DPRK-US talks on the nuclear issue of the Korean Peninsula slated to take place in Beijing. The DPRK-US talks for the settlement of the nuclear issue on the Korean Peninsula is slated to open in Beijing shortly. At the talks, the Chinese side will play a relevant role as the host state, and the essential issues related to the settlement of the nuclear issue will be discussed between the DPRK and the U.S. There is a wide range of international opinion on the Beijing talks, as they are to open at a time when the Iraqi war was fought. That's their language, and that's their jumbling of the language there, changing of tenses. They said, and I quote, "The Iraqi war teaches a lesson that in order to prevent a war and defend the security of a country and the sovereignty of a nation, it is necessary to have a powerful physical deterrent force." So obviously, they are convincing their people the United States is about to attack poor, poverty-stricken, starving, freezing, helpless little North Korea. So the reason they have to have a nuclear program is to defend themselves against the vicious, rotten, warmongering cowboy George Bush and the United States, who have designs to come over there and take them over and put U.S. troops on North Korean soil the way we have 37,000 of them on the South Korean soil. And do you think they convince those people of that? Sure they do. They can point to it. They can see, look what happened. The people don't know. They can't go over there to Seoul. They can't see these gigantic, huge banks and insurance buildings. They can't see the high-rise hotels. They can't see one of the biggest skylines of the glittering, huge, big buildings that you've ever seen on the face of the earth in Seoul, Korea. They don't know that South Korea manufactures automobiles and exports hundreds of thousands of them to the United States. They don't know that you and I might buy clothing and watches and cameras and jewelry and all kinds of things made in South Korea. They don't know the glittering showcase of democracy that has become Seoul. They're completely ignorant. They have only government-controlled television and very little of that, maybe one per 2,000 or 3,000 people. They don't have radios. They don't get to read newspapers. There's no freedom of the press. They read what Kim Jong-il tells them. They think what he tells them to think. So this is the word. Now think about it from an overview for a moment. In 1945, the United States had all the marbles. We had the atomic bomb. The Russians and no one else knew that we only had two of them and that we'd exploded both of them and didn't have any more, but were frantically going to make some more. It only took about 2 years for the Russians to steal those secrets by dirty, rotten spies to whom money was everything. Like every now and then, as embarrassing and hideous as it is, we'll find that there'll be a Navy chief petty officer or a Marine Corps officer or an Army officer who will sell out the United States of America for their short-term pecuniary interest of hundreds of thousands of dollars from the Russians who will pay them for information. So every secret the United States has ever had has been stolen. In some administrations, it has been given away as a quid pro quo for votes. In some administrations, guidance systems in ICBMs, now in China, pointed at American cities, were given to the Chinese by the President of the United States. And when I think about that, I ask, is God going to continue to bless America? The answer that comes to me is a big question mark, wonderment. I wonder, how long? And I think about the potential change in government, and I think about what is happening right now, and I think about the media and Hollywood, and I think about the aftermath of the war. I look at the whining already. I look at the anti-war demonstrators who are now finding new reasons to attack the United States, and I wonder whether George Bush, like his father, who was extremely successful, who rode a tremendous wave of popularity shortly after the first Gulf War, will find himself, by all of these attacks, plummeted to the near bottom, and that we will have a Democrat in the White House in less than another 2 years. Now, I say, may God prevent it, God save us from that, because I have, and that may be a political speech, you take it any way you want. I think that one of those liberals in that White House, remember the way Carter gutted the military and gutted the very feeling of Americanism, of pride, and of nationalism in this country, and Ronald Reagan came along and restored it and built it up. Remember that wonderful ceremony where they had completely redone the exterior of the Statue of Liberty, and Reagan was there, and the most incredible fireworks display in history, and that song by Lee Greenwood, and the way everyone wept about God Bless America? Reagan built up the military. Along came Clinton, gutted the military, destroyed their pride. The first issue on the table when the man got in there was queers in the military, and tried to force that upon the military. The don't ask, don't tell story. And of course, one of the dances and one of the parties in the very moment of the inauguration balls for the Clintons was, hey, hey, we are here, we are queer, and now we're in the White House. I can't doubt the veracity of what they said. I don't know who they meant, but that's what they said. I think they meant we have a man in the White House who really goes for gay rights. Well, it was only a matter of time after the Russians got a hold of our secrets that others would as well. We probably shared them with Britain. Britain came along, became a nuclear power. The Soviet Union exploded a hydrogen bomb by 1950. Shortly thereafter, it was announced that the Chinese were experimenting with nuclear weapons. So finally, India, because they were threatened being the subcontinent with the yellow hordes above them, they had to have nuclear weapons. Now Pakistan and India can't get along, so Pakistan, in defense of India and the struggle over Kashmir, has got to have nuclear weapons. So now North Korea, fearing the attack by the United States that they are sure is coming, which is utter nonsense, have got to have nuclear weapons. And if they do, then Japan is going to have to follow suit. And so is South Korea. It was inevitable. It was inevitable. Once the world took the step that we did in developing a weapon that is so fearsome that one weapon can explode all of the TNT that could have been gathered by all the scrapers, earth movers, and bulldozers that have been laboring night and day from the time of Christ until this. That we have bombs now that have explosive power that would represent that kind of force. That's why they're called megatons. Millions of tons of TNT could obliterate a whole city the size of New York in one blinding moment. And nation after nation after nation wants to get their hands on those weapons. The United States is trying to be the world's policeman. Maybe we should be. But if we are, we're going to have to completely change our policies. You know that no American government, I don't care whether it's conservative or liberal, would ever do that. We could never be the way King David was, and we are still over there in Israel warring against the Philistines, which is Palestinians. And because ancient Israel disobeyed God and did not do what God said in obliterating some of those peoples many, many generations ago, many centuries ago, some of the problems that are extant in this world today are holdover from that very time. If we were a nation under God, God would take care of our enemies. And the way he would do it is the way he's going to do it during the day of the Lord. He would take care of our enemies in the same way that he turned the Edomites, Moabites, and Ammonites against each other, and they all slaughtered each other at the days of Jehoshaphat, when the people walked out there with nothing but a song and praise toward God on their lips and walked out amid thousands upon thousands of bodies and collected all the loot. And not a single individual lost his or her life among the people of Judah. But God caused their enemies to fall before them. We should have known it was only a matter of time until third world dictatorships would obtain nuclear weapons. And we just can't prevent it. Now here is Syria. What are we going to do about it? I'll tell you what we should do about it, but that's my opinion. Put it down to my opinion. Syria knows what we were able to do in Iraq. We were able to take out a regime and spare the nation. We could simply tell little Assad, who has no military background, he's just his daddy's boy. He doesn't have any, you know, what was it? He's a dentist, isn't he? I think he went to school to become a dentist. Anyway, You can walk down the streets of Damascus and there is an office that says Hamas. They have an actual office with an address in Damascus. Here are, you know, the Black September and the Abu Nidal and the all different ones that he's Fedayeen and all these Arab fighters and all the bombers, and they all have offices and they openly operate. They pull up with their black limousines and go about Damascus going about their business. Now, right now and for many, many decades, Syria has been an occupier of Lebanon. Lebanon is a client state. The Baqa Valley is filled with thousands of Syrian tanks and Syrian soldiers. It was Syrians who engineered the bombing of the American Marine barracks in Lebanon and caused us during the Reagan administration to tuck our tail and to go out and just leave it to them. And it was the people of that Ba'ath party who were killing Maronite Christians in a civil war that utterly destroyed the Paris of the Middle East. And I've been there at the Phoenician Hotel, and it was beautiful during those days. The Paris of the Middle East, Beirut. It became a city that looked just like Wuppertal or Mainz or Koblenz following World War II. Utterly demolished. The Syrians, Assad, his father, did all of that. We could say to him, and right now we've got the power and the strength, all of our forces are there. They're in the area, but we're already starting to pull some of the aircraft carriers out of there. We're already sending, all of our B-2 bombers are gone, B-1 bombers are gone, all of our B-52s are back over here at Barksdale, all of the F-117s are gone already, the Kitty Hawk's on its way home, shortly another aircraft battle carrier group will be on its way home. What do we want? We don't want anything except peace. We just want happiness, productivity. Would most Americans, good-hearted Americans, like to see the Iraqis have a better lifestyle? Yes, I think they would. Would they like to see that oil flowing so that we could not only have lower gas prices, but they also benefit? So everybody benefits? Yes, they would. Wouldn't they like to see them have a breath of freedom? Would they like to see them have a government that represents Shias, Sunnis, and Kurds, and women? Yes, we would. So what do we want from Iraq? We just want them to behave. We just want them not to threaten their neighbors, not to threaten Israel, not to threaten us, not to threaten anybody else. What do we want from Syria? Same thing. We have today the power to enforce our will on Assad. We could say, you will give up every one of those Iraqis, and you will abandon your WMD program, and you will expel and get rid of, shut down the offices of, and hand over the leaders of all those terrorist organizations. Or we will come in, we know exactly where you are, we know your favorite haunts, you saw what we did to Baghdad, and we can cause our cruise missiles to turn right at the street intersection and come in the third floor window if we want to. And just tell him that's what's going to happen. Now, doesn't that sound awful? But you know, back during the days of the judges and back during the days of King David, that's the way God Almighty, and He is the God of the Old Testament who became Jesus Christ of the New, the Lord Jesus Christ that you and I worship. But the false Christ, the namby-pamby, sticky, sentimental, smarmy, sweet little, wouldn't step on a crack lest you break your mother's back, wouldn't hurt a fly, bless you, little Lord Jesus, that Jesus, praise you, Jesus, love the Lord of the world, is not the God of the Old Testament. There are people who will read the Old Testament and say, I could never worship the God of the Old Testament, not knowing they're talking about Jesus Christ of Nazareth. What was the prize that David had to bring to Saul to win his daughter? You suppose he took all that stuff willingly? Suppose it was given to him? People said, here, hand me that sharp flint. I'll give you what you need. Lining up 200 of them, you know. No, I think everybody knows what happened back during those days. Now, when God said, you go in there and you absolutely wipe them out, He's talking about expurgation of a country that was ridden with paganism and every kind of filth. I think you all know where AIDS came from without going into a lot of detail. It came right out of Africa, just like a lot of our music and rhythm has come out of Africa. It came right out of Africa, and it is a scourge and a plague on the entirety of all of humankind today. And now this SARS thing is getting going as well, and that is something of great concern. Will God continue to bless America? He has blessed us in some small ways. He has blessed us in limited fashion from time to time in recent wars. He blessed us in Grenada, in Panama, in the first Gulf War. But did he bless us in Vietnam? Flawed policy. And we were not blessed in Vietnam. We lost. And Vietnam hurt the American conscience a lot worse than a lot of us realize, and to this day, it does really affect our people. I want to give you some recommended reading and then conclude this with a few statements. Any of you that want to take some of this down, do it. Otherwise, those that get the tape can listen to it. If you want a recommended book list about crime in America and the judicial system, here is one entitled Dracula in Charge of the Blood Bank, an Exposé of the American Judicial System. It represented 6 years of painstaking research. It is the most candid book ever written on the American judiciary. There's a special section of crime in America and the criminal justice system. It's 400 pages, and it is sold for $16.95. I have nothing to do with that. I'm just telling you about it because I found it on the internet. And I suppose if you wanted to buy that book, you could go to Amazon.com and you could buy it. It's expensive, but it's only for those who really want to know the shocking truth about that. One called The American Agenda for Legal Justice Reform. And that is like a detailed manual for civil, criminal, juvenile crime, as well as bankruptcy, all of that, the prison system itself. That is a manual and is to be submitted to Congress with a petition trying to get a law written for legal justice reform. And it's expensive. It's $24.95. American Agenda for Legal Justice Reform. Legal Watch. You've heard of Judicial Watch. That is a group that have quite a website, and they try to keep tabs on a lot of this as well. In Keeping Up with Crime on America, that's a monthly publication, focuses upon crime in the American judicial system, the dominant lawyer culture, which is absolutely obscene, and the nationwide movement in legal justice reform. And you get all 12 issues of that for $35. There's a self-help law information manual for people that want to get their own divorces. I just say that tongue-in-cheek. For those who want to manage their own legal affairs and stop paying a ransom to lawyers to do everything for them, you can get a large manual for $24.95 and do it all yourself. There's one called Crime in America, The Undeclared War, kind of a hair raiser, because the entire realm of crime, organized crime, drug addiction and abuse, all of that type of thing, is like an undeclared war. And the causes, the overview, solutions, a great in-depth study, and it's a soft cover manual for $21.95. One is called A Complete Guide to the Law, that gives you everything you wanted to know about the law in one volume, and that's a 500-page book at $16.95. Two more, Put the Law on Your Side, Strategies for Winning the Legal Game by Bertram Harnett. It's a real hard-headed, straight-from-the-shoulder, no-nonsense, practical advice about legal help and self-help, 300 pages at $9.95, one of the better bargains of those books. Then there's one called Criminal Justice, over 700 pages by Joel Samaha from the University of Minnesota, and it goes entirely through the criminal justice system and how it operates, and it is expensive. It's $35.95. Well, today we live, as all of us know, in a nation that is in a position of world leadership. Let me show you how it is we lead the world. We lead the world militarily. We lead the world in space. We lead the world in space communication. We lead the world in transportation. We lead the world in affluence. We lead the world in GDP. We lead the world in possession of automobiles, refrigerators, double ovens, and all the energy slaves of the housewife. The United States possesses more than half of all the automobiles in the world, and we consume a voracious amount of the energy of the world. We also lead the world in crime. We lead the world in pornography. We lead the world. We're tops in motion picture making, in the writing and the production and the distribution of violence and sex all around the world. We lead the world in television production and distribution, in all of the programs that are there, the silly cartoons, the stupid sitcoms, the rotten crime programs, the sex and the violence that are there every day. We lead the world in divorce. We lead the world in illegitimacy. more illegitimate children born in the United States in spite of abortion than any other country in the history of the world. We lead the world in the murder of the unborn, 17 million so far. 54 every hour. Some of them with their little heads sticking out and have the brain sucked out by some kind of a vacuum they use. We lead the world in drug abuse. We lead the world in organized crime. We lead the world in gambling. We are, in so many categories, truly the world leader. Will God then continue to bless America? I could hope so, but I'm afraid I have to leave you with a question, because I honestly don't know.